This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. But where I really want to be this week is Las Vegas. That's where most of the high-tech companies are to unveil their latest gadgets, 12-foot HD TVs, cars that drive themselves, wireless everything. Picture almost 2 million square feet of nothing but electronics. The downside? It's not open to the public. Our tech pal Larry Magid got in armed with a press pass. So did Sean Kaptan with Popular Science. They'll tell us what gizmos they're seeing, the hits and the duds, talk about the trends and breakthroughs at this year's show, though it sounds like 2008 is more about making the gadgets we already use better rather than coming up with any breakout new technology. If you want to talk with Larry or Sean at the Consumer Electronics Show, give us a call, 800-989-8255. The email address is talk@npr.org. And you can always go the high-tech route and join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Later in the hour, George McGovern, the former senator and presidential candidate, joins us to discuss why he believes President Bush and Vice President Cheney ought to be impeached. But first, the Consumer Electronics Show. Larry Magid is a technology analyst for CBS News. You read his articles in the New York Times as well. Today, he's in front of a microphone on the floor of the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. Larry, nice to talk with you again.
Nice to be here.
And there's obviously plenty to talk about. Can you tell us, though, what it's like to be at this show? Just how big is it?
Well, you know, you acted like you're jealous, and the fact is that you talk to anybody in the media, and it's a burnout. It is. I know it sounds like a lot of fun, and it is fun, but we're talking about, 140,000, 150,000 people. We're talking about two major venues that are about 2 or 3 miles apart, gridlock traffic in Las Vegas, gridlock traffic on the floor. That's all the bad stuff. But the good stuff, as you pointed out, Neil, is just every piece of technology you can imagine, things that you can buy, things that you might be able to buy later in the year, and things that you may never be able to buy or perhaps can buy in a year or two, depending upon whether they ever make these things real. And I'm not even getting into the question of whether anybody can actually afford some of this stuff. But if it has a chip in it, if you can plug it into a wall, chances are, or a battery, chances are it's at the Consumer Electronics Show.
And one of the words we're really hearing a lot this year, more than we ever have, is wireless. Have they found the wireless can opener yet?
I'm sure it's coming. There are really a couple of different aspects of wireless. There's wireless locally, getting information around the house or the office. And we're seeing something called wireless HDMI from PulseLink so that you can have your high-definition television getting its reception from your personal video recorder and your DVD player and your computer without cables. The only cable your TV would have in this perfect future world would be the electrical plug. You're seeing ways to
get... But then rugs would lie flat. Can't have that.
And my wife would stop yelling at me about the condition of our living room if we didn't have wires everywhere. And then, of course, how do you get the data from your computer to your television sets or set around the house? YouTube has made it very interesting, as have others, the fact that all of the television networks are now putting their programming on the Internet. People want to watch that on their 50-inch screens or whatever size screens they have, not just on their PC. So there's a lot of wireless there. And then finally, the wireless in the bigger picture, WiMAX, the ability to get a wireless signal anywhere in a metropolitan area. So you could be in a cab in Manhattan and be surfing the Internet, not necessarily through cellular and not through Wi-Fi, where you have to be within a few hundred feet, but anywhere, let's say within 20 miles of a Wi-Fi or a WiMAX transmitter, and be surfing the net or getting data.
And this is something actually that's been talked about for a number of years, but it's no longer pie in the sky by and by. They're going to roll that out this year.
That's right. Sprint has invested, I believe, $5 billion. They already have experiments going on in Washington and other cities. They're showing it off here. Intel is putting a lot into this. It is real. Now, whether it will come to a town near you in the next several years remains to be seen. But they are really pushing WiMAX and claiming that it's going to be serving us. So it remains to be seen how practical and how affordable it is when it's finally rolled out commercially.
Well, sitting right next to Larry on the floor at the CES is Sean Kaptan, Senior Associate Editor for Popular Science Magazine and PopSci.com. He edits the What's New section. And Sean, thanks for taking some time out of your trip to talk with us.
Oh, it's great to be able to sit down for a little while.
And one of the things that's unusual at the show this year is the number of car companies that are have exhibits and presentations of various types. And I have to ask you about this car that, I'm told it drives itself.
It was like being in a haunted car from some Stephen King novel. It's called The Boss. It's a Chevy SUV that was modified by a team from Carnegie Mellon University to be an autonomous vehicle. It was part of a government program called the DARPA Urban Challenge to create vehicles that could drive themselves. So with radar and sonar and lasers and I think 15 computers, it can basically find its way around and just take you anywhere.
But when you're sitting in the passenger seat, did you, you know, have the feeling that you needed to lunge over to that empty spot over there?
Well, it was eerier. I was sitting in the quote-unquote driver's seat, although I wasn't actually doing any driving. I was just watching the steering wheel spin around in front of me. And it's a pretty aggressive driving car, kind of like a New York cabbie. So because they had to win a race. So it takes off fast, it stops fast, it swerves around things. So it's an interesting experience.
And I take it it's not going to be available on the market in any time in the near future.
Well, they're saying within 10 years, which, considering what a leap this is in technology, that's pretty impressive.
Let's get some listeners involved in the conversation. Our guests are Sean Kapton of Popular Science and Larry Maggott, who's a tech analyst for CBS News and writes for the New York Times as well. If you'd like to join the conversation about the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And Tori's on the line. Tori's calling us from Syracuse, New York.
Hi, guys. Hi, Neil. I'm so happy you guys are doing a show today about tech stuff. My big question, and hopefully either one of your panelists can answer it for me, is given Warner Brothers' big announcement this week, what's the status on high-def DVD versus Blu-ray?
Yeah, who's...
And I'll take my comments off the air.
Yeah, who's going to be the Betamax here?
Well, I've actually just came from the Toshiba booth and the high-definition folks, and I talked to a couple of people. I'm speaking with an official spokesperson later. They claim they're still alive, but the buzz on the floor is that the format wars are coming to an end. As you know, last Friday, Warner said it will no longer be supporting the HD DVD format, which has been competing with Blu-ray. Blu-ray currently has about 70% of the content. So the thought that HDTV could survive with just two studios and 30% of content is rather dim. And most people here are predicting that the format wars are coming to an end. Now, again, the folks that one would think would be lying in the coffin refuse to acknowledge that they're dead. There is some possibility that they would continue to operate and people would get dual players. There are a lot of people that have HDDVD players that might have bought them over the holidays. But at the moment, and you know, just like within politics, sometimes the front runner can go behind. But at the moment, it seems pretty likely that the Blu-ray format is going to survive. And in fact, the Howard Stringer, the CEO of Sony, began his talk by saying, "I'm feeling blue." And he didn't mean that he was depressed. It meant he was elated because they're backing Blu-ray and they think that they're winning.
So if you predict, though, if that is what happened, those people who bought those HD DVD players for Christmas, they're going to turn out to be junk?
Not quite. You can watch standard definition discs on them, and they're going to look great because they upscale on a high definition DVD. So your standard def DVDs will look good. And right now, I believe it's Paramount and Universal still have contracts to produce HD DVD, so they will be creating content. Maybe you'll just fall in love with Paramount and Universal titles and won't want to watch Disney or others. But look, I think that consumers benefit by this war ending. I don't care personally which one wins. They're both fine. But it's got to win for the industry to move forward, and I think most people in the industry know that. Most consumers know that they want to be able to go into a store, buy a player, they want to go to another store and buy a disc or rent a disc and know that everything's going to work together. And until that happens, I think the industry is just going to flounder around.
Yeah. And there's a real question about with downloads, you know, gradually developing and getting more sophisticated. Now we're starting to get high definition downloads. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a possibility that technology will leapfrog right over the disk.
That's what Bill Gates is saying. He's saying, you know, Microsoft is in the HDDB camp, and so in a sense they're losing this war. But he says, hey, long term, it's not going to matter because of downloads.
Bill Gates has made the keynote address at the Consumer Electronics Show, I guess, for any number of years now. This was his last go-round, Larry. What did he have to say?
Well, he looked back a little bit, and they had a little funny video about his last day at Microsoft where he drove away in his Ford Escort. We know Bill Gates, of course, drives a Ford Escort. Of course, they have a partnership with Ford. That could be why. He talked about Microsoft's emergence as a software company outside of the PC arena, in the car with their relationship with Ford and others, in the kitchen, in the living room. He really implied that Microsoft is moving way beyond the age of the personal computer to mobile. Everything that you see at CES, whether it's television sets or cell phones or automobiles, Microsoft wants to be running their software. It remains to be seen how well they'll do, because they don't dominate in this world the way they do in the PC arena, but they certainly are putting a lot of money into it. And I think that Bill Gates, as he moves into his new full-time job as a philanthropist and simply a chairperson of the Microsoft board, wants to see Microsoft evolve way beyond the personal computer.
Here's an email question from Patrick in Kansas City. I'd like to ask the guys at the CES whether or not they're seeing an increasing trend in devices designed to store rented media, similar to Yahoo's Y Music Unlimited, where a monthly membership fee gives you unlimited album downloads that you can put on a device or stream on your computer, but which you cannot burn to disk. This media will cease to function if you let your subscription lapse, for example. Does this media distribution model seem to be increasing based on the devices they're seeing there? Sean Kapton?
Well, companies are proceeding with that. Rhapsody, for example, basically a music rental service, announced a partnership with Hire for a new device that can download directly over Wi-Fi, so you don't have to be at your computer to use it. It's called the Ibiza. It's a pretty clever device. And, you know, we're starting to see more in the movie realm as well. There's a company called Vudu. They actually announced this a little bit before CES. They keep the first few minutes of thousands of movies on their disc. So as soon as you press play, you get the movie, and then in the background, the rest of it downloads. So in theory, you get a seamless download experience. You're not sitting and waiting for it to happen. And that's also for either a rental or a purchase service where it's locked on the disc. So it's a kind of it's not the same thing as just having it and being able to do whatever you want to with it.
And there's word that Apple is going to be doing video rentals. Once you can watch rented video on the iPod, which of course is the huge installed base, and we expect to hear something at Macworld that comes up in January 15th from Steve Jobs about this, assuming that the rumors are true.
Of course, Apple, one of the companies that is not or never is at the CES, they have their own Macworld coming up later, as Larry just mentioned. We're talking about what's new at the Consumer Electronics Show. Remember the days of lugging your tube TV up to your fourth floor walk-up? Wait till you see the thickness of the TVs they're showing in Vegas. They'll make moving easy. More on the thinner, faster, and smarter in just a moment. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about CES this hour. That's the Consumer Electronics Show. And of all the cool acronyms that are floating around the show, WiMAX has got to be the coolest. It's supposed to be the solution to every internet access problem you can think of. The speed of broadband, it's wireless, it's got wide coverage instead of tiny little Wi-Fi hotspots. Any questions? Ask our guests. Larry Magid, technology analyst for CBS News. You can read his articles in the New York Times as well. And Sean Kapton, senior associate editor for Popular Science Magazine and PopSci.com. Both of them on the scene with us from Las Vegas. Of course, you can join us on your phone, 800-989-8255, or by email, talk@npr.org. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And this is Jim. Jim's with us from Harvard, Illinois.
Hey, good morning. Let's see here. Being a part of the Consumer Electronics Convention, what is the main tagline you are hearing from the salespeople representing their products? Like, what kind of need are they selling the consumer on what they should have?
I think it depends on what they're selling.
Whatever it is, you need it. Whether you need it or not, they think you do.
Well, is there a breakout technology this year? Is there something that we're all going to absolutely have to have? Or is this an incremental CES?
Well, I think going back to what Larry opened with, I mean, wireless in some form is the big news, whether it's local wireless that he talked about, whether it's WiMAX, whether it's LTE, which is another acronym that other companies will be competing with WiMAX, or whether it's mobile television. I saw yet two more acronyms, MPH and AVSB, that allow you to beam digital TV to a car, and the picture doesn't break up. It stays steady. It looks perfect. So everything kind of being wireless in some way.
And then speaking of wireless, also mobile phones. I just got off the phone with Broadcom. I'm going over there in a few minutes to look at their technology. They have a chip which will allow you to get 720p video, which basically means broadcast standard high-definition video on a cell phone using a standard battery. They claim the phone could run up to 6 hours watching video will have a 12-megapixel camera, a high-quality camcorder. So the idea that, these handheld devices, multifunction handheld mobile devices, which of course are radios, they're cell phones, but they're also television sets and television stations, so to speak, and they claim with high-definition broadcasts. That would be pretty phenomenal if reporters could be walking around with a cell phone and go live on the air with high-definition programming. You know, that begs the question whether the lenses are any good and plenty of other questions. But certainly, I think mobile is continuing to evolve. It's been at every show for the last decade or so. But now the convergence of mobile and multimedia is definitely real and commonplace, I think, on phones today.
Hmm. Jim, thanks for the call.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And it sounds like, from what you're saying, that last year's big device, the iPhone, has certainly had an impact this year.
Absolutely. We're seeing, I mean, a lot of things about the iPhone. One, just phones that are slimmer and more attractive, like the phone that Larry's holding right now. Is that an LG?
It's the LG Voyager, which is the so-called iPhone killer. I'm not sure I would agree with that, but it certainly is inspired by the same concept that inspired the iPhone,
yeah.
The touchscreen and all the bells and whistles you can imagine. And we're going to see plenty of those.
And what they call multi-touch on the iPhone has really taken off. OnePlus maker, I forget who, was showing a 50-inch TV where you can kind of move your hands on it, enlarge and, you know, or shrink objects on it. Panasonic is showing an entire wall where you can do that. They have cameras and infrared that can read your hand gestures, and you can slide things around on a wall, open up your email, turn on your voicemail, pop up pictures, download, you know, look up information, and just slide all around by hand gestures.
And Microsoft's tabletop computer screen, the idea you go
Surface.
To a retail shop, you'd have this table, this Surface, like a table, and you would use sort of iPhone-like gesture, they wouldn't say that, to manipulate what's on the screen.
All right. Yeah. Didn't I see that in Minority Report? That screen on the wall.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's remarkably like it.
Yes, you got
except
a good preview.
Except it works better. You don't have to wear the funny. You don't have to wear the funny gloves.
Or get chased. And anyway, let's get Jay on the line. Jay's calling us from Madison, Wisconsin.
Hi. I can't remember if it was Larry or your other guest who mentioned having to get all the wiring in the living room. Passed the aesthetic committee in the household.
Yes, indeed.
And I actually had a little bit of a coup a few years ago, and in technology years, that's quite a long time ago. I was able to convince my wife to bring a PC into the living room.
Wow.
And it was just between an armoire, and our house is well suited for it, and it was also a second computer, so all the paraphernalia that normally clutters a PC area was off in another area. That solves so many problems for integrating our media, our music and our videos and internet experience with our television. All the solutions I've seen come up with that just fall short of that, you know, mm-hmm. whether it's Apple TV or I think it's SanDisk or somebody just came up with a device that's supposed to move data from a PC to a television. And Vive
yes.
technology, yeah. wireless, all these things that I've seen, and it's like nothing can compare to if you can just get past that hump of having a PC sitting next to your television, wireless keyboard and mouse, and keep it as minimal as possible. What's in the future for technology this year to get internet content, video podcasts, television, programming, movies integrated with the television from the PC?
Sean,
well, I'm jealous that your wife let you do that. Sorry, go ahead, Sean.
Yeah, I think actually all the great inventions to do that have already come out, and people don't want them. Microsoft has Media Center, which you're far familiar with, software in Windows, where you can control a PC from your TV with a remote control. It plays wonderful video, it records TV, it plays music, it does everything. And it's not that popular. I think there's still a mental barrier against having the TV in the living or the PC in the living room.
And Intel made a big push 2 years ago.
Huge.
A huge push, and we've heard almost nothing about that initiative.
I even forgot what the brand name was at this point.
Yeah.
But what we are seeing is definitely, I mean, people keep hammering away at the idea of how can I get my TV to connect to my computer without the computer being there. And I think we're making some progress. HP had a TV they brought out last year called the MediaSmart that basically had a wired and wireless connection to your computer, so you could basically use it as if you had a Media Center computer in the room, but it wasn't. It was somewhere else. This year, they came out with a little box that you can plug into your TV, so any TV can have the same capability.
And I think just about everyone, Apple, Microsoft, in Apple's case, Apple TV, and Microsoft through its Xbox, There are probably dozens of booths here that have a wireless solution to get the data from the PC to the television, and that seems to be the prevailing attitude right now. But again, there hasn't been a huge uptake of the products that are out there. Steve Jobs calls Apple TV a hobby because he just hasn't sold enough of them to make them a business, and they've been on the market now for several months.
Yeah.
Jay, good luck with that computer in the living room.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's go talk now with this is Max. Max with us from Oakland, California.
Hi.
Hi.
I want to ask your guests, this is a pretty grand comment here. I think WiMAX is going to ultimately kill terrestrial radio, broadcast television, and satellite radio and cable television, or at least annihilate their market share, because what it means is web radio equals terrestrial radio, web radio equals broadcast, web television equals broadcast television. So the little guy, the bedroom producer, is going to be able to have as much market reach, ultimately, you know, maybe 10 years down the road, as you on NPR do. And so it's going to basically create a situation where merit is what matters. And I'm wondering if you're guessing that that's going to happen. If it's not, I've already seen, you know, AT&T with the iPhone, I believe that they tried to cripple it because it was too powerful, and I'm wondering if major corporations are going to continue to try and do that as well.
Well, just a reminder that the first technology that was going to kill radio was TV. But anyway, Larry Magid, what do you think?
Well, look, this is an interesting question. First of all, smart media companies are going to be agnostic about the delivery system. So if you're NPR or CBS or anybody else, you're going to be on the Internet. You're going to be on WiMAX. And frankly, you know, you're not in the business of transmitting through those towers that we call radio. You're in the business of providing information. I think it is true that we're going to have a huge number of people doing, we already do through podcasting, we're going to have thousands, if not millions, of people producing programmings, and some of them will rise to the point where they could be as or more popular than major media companies. Smart media companies will hire some of those people. Some of them are going to create their own franchise. But at the end of the day, it's all about quality. And I think that the media companies that understand that and invest in it are going to continue to do very well. Those that keep thinking that we are in the television business, we are in the radio business, would be like thinking that you're in the railroad business and not investing in airlines. They've got to diversify. But at the same time, you know, it'll be a while before you're driving down the highway and turning onto, you know, WCBS or KQED San Francisco through your WiMAX radio. It may happen, but it's not going to happen very soon.
And even if it starts to happen, those are you saying 50-mile areas? There are going to be big gaps in between those 50-mile areas.
That's right. Now, satellite radio, I would worry a little bit about, because that's the whole promise of satellite radio, is the ability to have hundreds of channels. Well, now we could have millions of channels. So that could be a threat to XM/Sirius, but we'll have to see.
Okay. Thanks very much for the call. And anytime you want to predict the demise of our business, feel free to call back.
Not talking about the demise, talking about you losing a little market share, that's all.
That's okay. That's just having fun with you. Thanks very much for the call. One of the things that TVs themselves are one of the big features at the show, Sony's new OLED TV. Larry Magid, what's that?
Well, it's the organic light-emitting diode. By the way, you can't eat it, but it's got organic material in it. What it is, basically, is a very, very high-resolution screen. It's also extremely thin. I don't remember the number of millimeters, but it's the size of three credit cards, about 3 millimeters thick. Very brilliant picture. It should have a lot less energy consumption because it doesn't have a backlight. It actually, the pixels, in a sense, light up themselves, putting it simply, but it doesn't have a backlight. It's very expensive today. The only one on the market that I'm aware of is an 11-inch one from Sony that you can buy for $2,500. And I don't think there are many people who would spend that much money, although the Sony rep told me they're selling out the ones they're making. And now they also are showing a 27-inch one, and there's talk that in a few years we'll have much larger ones. So it's a future technology for all practical purposes, but brilliant display and ultra-thin.
How thin is ultra-thin?
What, 3 millimeters? Is that right, Sean?
3 millimeters on the OLED TV at the 11-inch size. I think right. The 27-inch is something like 10 millimeters. So it's rather fat, you know, in comparison.
By comparison, but we're talking very thin, very light, and that's certainly, you know, you could easily hang it on a wall without it, you know, probably thinner than most picture frames.
Without even looking for the stud, probably, yeah.
Probably
yeah.
In this case, yeah. The 11-inch, you certainly could, but I wouldn't spend $2,500 on an 11-inch TV set, personally.
Sean, is the picture quality that much better?
Well, there's some inherent advantages to OLED. The color, just the color, what they call the color gamut, in other words, the reds are red, or the greens are green, or the blues are bluer, so you get more lifelike color on it. And also, when the pixel is off, it's perfectly black.
Yeah.
And actually, black is kind of considered sort of the last frontier in television, because if you have a bigger difference between black and light, things sort of pop out of the screen more.
We're talking with Sean Kapton of Popular Science Magazine and PopSci.com, and with Larry Maggott, a tech analyst for CBS News, who also writes for the New York Times. They're both in Las Vegas at the Consumer Electronics Show. If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation, coming to you from NPR News. And let's get Lisa on the line. Lisa's calling us from Muncie, Indiana.
Hi. I love your show, by the way.
Thank you.
But I would like to ask, with the WiMAX being the next Wi-Fi, would it be sufficient to, instead of having cell phone cells, to have like VoIPs, like digital voice and like Vonage on cell phones?
So voice over internet protocol, VoIP phones or Skype, I think, is one of the big companies that does that. Sean Kapton, is that going to be a feature of the WiMAX?
Well, it's definitely possible. I mean, it's possible with today's current high-speed data on phones, such as EVDO. Skype works on phones currently. So it's really a question of, you know, in the future, are wireless companies going to be phone companies, or are they going to be data companies? Are they going to essentially be ISPs, the way you have internet service at home? And just given the economics of it and what consumers want in terms of ease and affordability, I think it's going to have to go that way.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's really an application issue. The technology supports it. Now, with companies like Sprint doing the investments, you have to believe they're not going to want to give up their franchise for cellular revenue. So they're going to have a revenue model that works for them, obviously, and hopefully works for consumers as well. That's what we have to wait for.
Yeah, I mean, Sprint has been saying that they're going to have their voice service and they're going to have their WiMAX service, but quite frankly, they could get WiMAX could do everything.
Absolutely. You could develop. Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead, Deb. Lisa?
Yeah, so I think that, like, ultimately, like, cell phones as we know it, like cells, would die out, and WiMAX is also obviously faster and better.
Again, there's going to be those big gaps between those WiMAX areas, least for quite some time.
There is
a possibility, though, right?
Well, there is one other technology that may actually be more pervasive quicker than WiMAX. It's called long-term evolution, LTE, and it's basically the next generation of high-speed cellular service that's going to be comparable to WiMAX, and it actually at this point has more support. Both AT&T and Verizon are supporting it. So that may actually get a faster and broader distribution than WiMAX does. It may beat WiMAX in the
punch. And the other thing is that whether it's WiMAX or LTE, it's probably not going to be the way Wi-Fi is, which is essentially free. It's not like you're going to set up a little WiMAX node on top of your house and share your internet connection with your neighbors. This is going to be controlled by the cellular companies as far as the actual access to the signal is concerned. But because it's open internet, it means that other people are free to develop applications on it. And that's where it gets very interesting. Extremely interesting. I'm sure Google and many other people are anxious to find ways to exploit this technology.
Lisa, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Here's an email from Debbie in Concord, New Hampshire. We got a big screen TV with HD and digital phones and high-speed internet connection for Christmas. My husband spent most of his waking hours reading each of those manuals with little success. Why can't the gizmos be more people-friendly and easier to use for us plain folk over 55 years of age? Thanks very much. Larry Maggott, is there any robot that's going to come and explain how all this other stuff works?
I sure hope so. I mean, I remember the days when our TVs had, 12 channels and an on-off switch, and there were some knobs on the back that you didn't mess with, and if they needed to be messed with, some guy came and did it. I think that watching television has become much more complicated than it ever has. Not only do you have to figure out your new high-screen TV, you have to figure out your personal video recorder, your various options on your DVD, and then you plug in an Apple TV. I think that consumers, I don't know if there'll be a backlash, but consumers have a reason to be concerned about the complexity of all this technology. It's a big issue in my home because, okay, I'm the geek and, you know, I don't mind doing all this. But one day my daughter came up to me when she was in high school and said, "Daddy, I just want to watch television and I can't figure out how to do it." And it's pretty sad. So I think the industry has a long way to go to make this simple and more seamless.
And Sean, I understand you tried out a camcorder that, gave you advice.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're starting to see now, whether it's in TVs or camcorders or GPS, an effort to actually make the devices usable. And I'm hoping that happens with TVs. It's happening. Camcorders now, both Panasonic and Sony, have models that do face recognition. They can tell a person's in the frame, and they'll do things. They'll make sure that person's in focus. They'll make sure the lighting and the color is right on that person. If that person moves, they'll track that person and keep them looking good. And then Panasonic added a feature where it analyzes the video you just shot, and if it came out badly, it says, you know what, this didn't come out right, you better reshoot it. Which is great, because normally you have to go home to figure that out.
Thanks to you both, and have a good trip home when the show ends tomorrow. Appreciate your time
today. Thanks a lot.
Larry Magid, a tech analyst for CBS News, who also writes for the New York Times, and Sean Kapton of Popular Science Magazine and PopSci.com. They joined us from the floor of the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. Coming up, former Senator George McGovern will be here in Studio 3A. He's calling for the impeachment of President Bush and Vice President Cheney. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.